McLean. Dick Coach's Corner.
You're listening to the Rugby Coach's Corner podcast with your host, Andy Plymer.
For someone to explain.
Bringing you up-to-date coaching concepts from the world of rugby. Sharing ideas to make the game better.
Okay, welcome to episode number 53 of the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. I'm your host, Andy Plymer, and joining me today is Will Precious. Will is the head video analyst at the Welsh Pro 14 team, the Dragons, and after completing a sports science degree from Brunel University in London, went straight into work as an analyst at the Ospreys in the first season of regional rugby. From there, he worked with the Welsh under 21 and then under 20 sides before taking on the Dragons role. I met Will on a recent professional development trip to Wales, and it's a pleasure to have him on the show. So welcome, Will.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no worries. So what's a bit of a backstory with regards to your kind of time in rugby and playing and then moving into the analyst role?
My actual background with rugby is not a playing or coaching background. I did a sports science degree at Brunel University. I obviously had a love of rugby growing up. I didn't play to any great level, but went to Borough Road, Brunel University, where rugby's sort of a pretty massive sport there. They got good history, good culture there. Mm-hmm. As soon as I finished my sports science degree, it was just purely by luck that someone mentioned me in a meeting and said, I know this guy, Will Precious. If you're looking for a rugby analyst, I'm sure he'd be pretty keen. He's Welsh, and the Ospreys just been formed at the time, and they were looking for a video analyst. So I jumped at the chance, and there we go. So however many years later, 12, 13 years later, I've been an analyst ever since. Thrown in at the deep end, to put it mildly. I was literally handed a laptop, a video camera, with Sports Code. That's the technology we use on the Apple Macs, and I was basically sort of told, right, you've got a job, all the best. So it was pretty challenging, and obviously the first season of regional rugby, the Ospreys, 2003-2004 was Lynn Jones. So he's the first real character I met in rugby. It was a heck of an intro.
Yeah, great. Yeah, not wrong. And you know, often when you're just kind of thrown in and said, okay, go do it, that's when you learn the best and the fastest, and you got to kind of survive, and that accelerates your learning a little bit. Did you find that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as you'll know through the rest of the podcast, it's sort of it's not a 9-to-5 job. You constantly got your laptop, as it says, on your lap in the evenings, and you're always looking at rugby and making sure you're up to speed with the new technology that comes out. Our Sports Code software is always being upgraded, so you've got to stay on top of all of that. And obviously, you're non-stop prepping. So every week, as you know, in your short time here, so we have a game every week. We don't really get weekends off from. We had four preseason games starting beginning of August, and our first weekend off will be the second weekend of March. So we're constantly churning out information and looking ahead to the following weekend. So you're always learning. It's nonstop. And like you said, being thrown at the deep end is pretty much, I'd say, is the best way to do it, really.
Great. All right. What about the Dragons themselves as a club? What's a bit of a description of that rugby club and the history, and you know, where players are selected from, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so as you mentioned about, I started the very start of regional rugby. So we were formerly a lot of clubs. So we'd be three or four professional clubs in Gwent. That then was all put down to sort of into four regional teams. So those three or four clubs, they kind of amalgamated, but obviously there's a lot of politics behind that. But so in 2003-2004, the Welsh regions were formed. We were known as the Newport Gwent Dragons up until July last year.
Okay.
So, again, a lot of politics on the naming of Newport, because we represent the whole of Gwent and things. So, so it's quite controversial, and it's been a bit of a roller coaster ride. And then we were taken over this July by the WRU, and so we are now known as just the Dragons, which we sort of, within our Gwent region, we have 70 plus clubs. Wow. So we are a massive region, basically. Yeah, so just to sort of name a couple of the players who would have played for the Newport Gwent Dragons, obviously Toby Faletau, Luke Charteris, Colin Charvis, Dan Lydiot, and Rod Snow was there for the first year or so of regional rugby. So, we've got a good link over to Canada.
Yeah, Canadian legend for sure.
Yeah, exactly. But as of now, obviously we're in a massive period of change, as you experienced last week. New breed of Welsh talent coming through, and that's part of what we're trying to push through at the Dragons is local talent, sprinkling with the odd bit of stardust if needs be. Mm-hmm. But all about local talent and pushing through as many players as we can for Wales. So we've totally changed our playing style this season. Going much more expansive, and we're really testing the players. And to be fair, Bernard Jackman's come in, and he's testing the coaches as well,
which
has been really refreshing. Onwards and upwards from now is our motto, I think.
Great. No, it's exciting times for sure, and I definitely, there was a great vibe there when I was there, and I just had so much fun. I was kind of the first Christmas you remember as a kid, that was kind of how I equated my feelings when I was at the club. It was awesome and super welcoming, and just a really good vibe there. And I think that's important. And that's got to help with, I was there when you guys were coming off a loss. So, having not taking those losses too heavily or not taking the wins too highly is pretty important as well.
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, we are extremely welcoming to everyone. We have lots of people come in and see us, and we're totally open with how we're training. And we don't try and sort of hide anything from anyone. Bernard openly says every week how impressive our training figures and numbers are for sort of the intensity of our work. And it's hopefully going to, I'm sure it will pay off maybe later in the season, but it's a long-term project. We're not expecting miracles on the field first season, maybe two seasons, but we're certainly building something. And in terms of the vibe that that he's helped create, now the players are all buying into it. They're driving standards, and I think Bernard's finding that great, that he can now sort of ease off putting the pressure on everyone and the players, because the players do it themselves. So it's great. It's a great place to be.
Awesome. Okay, so talk us through your week as a video analyst from say a Saturday game through to the next Saturday game. What's it look like on game day? What's it like at practice? The time in between practice. You mentioned a little bit about that. How's that week look for you? Apart from busy
on a. Yeah, apart from busy on a game day, our usual setup, we're generally on TV, so it's a case of we capture four angles we stack. It's called stacking. Put the four angles together for get multi view. So basically, every area of the picture is covered at any one time. So we sort of get a normal TV, what you'd see on the TV with the graphics and. The zooming in and the different angles that they use that any other viewer would watch at home. Mm-hmm. A tight angle, which is obviously great for set piece and contact area. A wide angle, which obviously is great for attack and backline attack. Usually we use a lot of it for that. And you can see how hard the players are working to get back into shape and reloading into position. And then we have a high behind camera, which at Rodney Parade at our ground is exceptional at just showing. It just shows spaces, spacing in between defenders, between attackers. It shows the backfield, so you can see your fullbacks and your wingers working in kicking battles. So we have four feeds. We have all access to those up on the gantry. So we have two full-time analysts working with the seniors. So I review the footage as it's coming into me. We have a couple of other review laptops that we link up to, so other coaches can be monitoring either set piece or backline play with Kerry and Sean, who you met last week.
Yeah.
And a coder who's inputting all the data. So as he inputs it, it syncs into my laptop and then into the others. And anything that sort of flags up, as the coaches are obviously concentrating on their sort of areas, I just make sure they're getting relevant footage. Anything that I see, obviously, you've got to be up to speed with the game plan. Anything that I see, I can just literally give them a quick call over, point anything out that I've seen, and they can get relevant messages on. We also have sort of live stat input windows, so we know what possession, territory, ball in play, if effective gain lines and set pieces and errors and penalty counts, just so we can keep an eye on that, because obviously, if anything is drastically wrong, it's sort of, it'll stand up on the stats and we can maybe address it and tweak our game plan slightly. Also access at halftime. If we're desperate to show stuff at halftime, we can quickly save a couple of clips to the laptop, and then coaches will run down with a laptop at halftime, and then they can just show the relevant players what they've seen, and it can often help. Players quite often respond to a visual clip rather than just being polled. So
yeah.
It's sort of you know the individual player, what he likes to hear. I know obviously it's a huge benefit for the player if he likes information that way. Post game then is where it gets really busy for us.
Okay.
So as I said, that the four angles, we make sure they're all in sync and linked up, and then we do all our post match coding, which is sort of the 4 to 6 hour. We call it a slog. It is a slog because I've been doing it for so long now.
Yeah.
So all your individual, your tackles, your passing, your kicking, all your carries. But it's not quite as simple as that. It's how effective you are in each of those as well. Mm-hmm. So each player will get they get a breakdown of their effectiveness in attack and defense and their kicking post game. So I code up the attack, which I've taken sort of more of a lead on this year, and our other analyst is more on defensive duty now. But okay. Still, if you combined it, it would be 10 to 12 hours worth of coding post game. Wow. So.
Insane.
Generally, we do it through the night just so we can get it done and as free a weekend as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're talking a 2, 3 a.m. finish and with a bit more maybe on the Saturday or Sunday morning after a game.
Mm-hmm.
Something new that has been coming in for the last couple of years as well is online platforms. Players like being able to view the game at home on their phones, on their iPads anytime. So we upload angles onto this online platform just so they can watch it on their day off. And we've got a great uptake on that from the players. So we've got sort of 50 of them, even if they're not involved in the match, they know on Monday if for whatever reason we're abroad and they haven't been able to sign plus it, and they can watch it on their phones or on their iPads when they're going home. And it just helps our process, really, our review preview process, that we can drop things on online. After all the coding, we've got stat reports. We've got a stats app. We'll speak more about the WIU involvement and things later on, I think. They've got a great stats app, which we put all our codes into that, and it generates a fantastic report. We then abbreviate it because coaches don't really want to be sifting through 70 or 80 pages.
Yeah.
So we abbreviate it to sort of a 12-page report, a couple of pages for each coach, basically,
right,
for their key areas, just so they can see anything key. If anything jumps out, then from the stats, then we'll add that page of stats in. Back it up with maybe a couple of clips, and we can share clips and we can share clips via email on the Sunday and just say, what are your thoughts on this? What are your thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's our post game done then. So that's all emailed off to the coaches on the Sunday, so they can have a look over and pull out any clips, any numbers that they think are important to them as well that they've seen. And then that obviously leads us into the first day back in. So on the Monday, an early coaches meet where Bernard will sort of just literally go around the table and see thoughts on the matches, mm-hmm. on the match, anyone who's done well. Any areas you think we can improve, what worked well from the previous training week, so good training transfer. Yeah. And it's great that we all have a say, we all have an input. He really values all of our opinions. So it's great. I'm not just, it's great. I'm not just churning out video. I'm asking an opinion as well. And so obviously, you know, as analysts, we watch a lot more footage than anyone else. So obviously we sort of know it. We may know a bit more than, or may have seen a bit more than other people. So it's great to have that input. Our first day back is coaches run through one-on-ones. Mm-hmm. So they're available for 3-4 hours one-on-ones, so we can help with any of their individual footage that they're doing with the one-on-ones. We have a team review. So our aim is to have the entire game from Saturday all finished with, reviewed by Monday afternoon before we then go out for our sort of afternoon flush training session where boys get rid of their soreness. And then Tuesday is when we go crack on with our opposition. So we'll have an opposition preview.
Right.
It's our biggest training day. So we'll have unit previews and a team preview. So units, obviously for forwards, it's generally the set piece. Bit about contact area. Mm-hmm. For the backs, it'll be where can we expose them attacking from set piece and general phase play and kicking game. And that's put together with anything from a team perspective to help inform our training session. So we look at opposition team weaknesses, mm-hmm. and strengths, just so we know where we think they'll target us. That obviously being the main training day, we'll have two or three analysts out. We've got an academy analyst and an intern who help during training. We cover two or three angles off on training days. Again, high behind camera for our back strikes and nice close-ins and a couple of sides and an over the top sort of angle for the set piece. Mm-hmm. So that is, as I said, main training day. We cover everything. Every training session is covered anyway, but that's our main, this is the main session that we take most out of, and we'll review it post session. And anything that sort of stands out then, after our Wednesday usual day off, we'll just do a quick review on a Thursday of our training before a team run, and then heading into the following game. Our Wednesday day off is another busy day for us in terms of opposition.
Yeah.
So we try and work just over a week in advance, basically.
Mm. Right.
So that just consists of, we normally, for an opposition analysis, we'll look anywhere for sort of four games previously, the last four games, or mm-hmm. if we've played them early in the season, then certain teams, that they like to play you a certain way. They may have certain strikes to combat your defence. So, we always review the last time we played them. So we build a report on that, really. So it's a keynote presentation along with clips of where we can attack them, where they're going to attack us. And on that team run day, the Thursday or the Friday, after training, we meet as a coaching group, and I present their sort of strengths and weaknesses, and just any key individuals as well that we feel are threats or weaknesses that we can really attack and have a go at. But it's you've got to be very careful with your opposition analysis in that you still got to play your way. So it's not about saying you see space there, but that's not the way you play. You'd have to change your entire game plan to to get that space. Mm-hmm. So it's very in keep with the way you play. yeah, obviously that's another thing, just making sure that this season we've been far more proactive in getting the prep done sort of 10 days previously. So then when we do then come back in on the Monday, we already know sort of what we're going to preview for the opposition.
Right.
And it takes a lot of pressure off us on that Monday and Tuesday, really.
Yeah.
So,
that is our working week.
That's our working week. I was actually going to add on Bernard, obviously, he asked us for the odd promo videos as well. So he's obviously on a signing frenzy at the moment. Signed a few boys. So, he loves his social media, and he gets us to put out some good videos of the boys we're signing online.
Oh, great.
On our Twitter. But they're good fun to do.
Yeah, awesome.
They're fine.
No, that's cool. Wow, so, that's unbelievably detailed and comprehensive. And, you know, I know a lot of people who listen to the show aren't obviously working in professional rugby. What kind of advice would you give to that grassroots coach out there who's doing video analysis, but often it's the head coach or the assistant coach who does that role and does the video? How would you kind of if you were in that position, what would you do?
Yeah, obviously being grassroots, I know it's probably a Tuesday, Thursday evening thing. So it's making sure it's concise and to the point is really key. I rambled on about a huge amount of things there. We go through in so much detail everything so that we can find that perfect sort of one clip just to highlight everything rather than show 10 clips. We're always striving to show one clip that sums it up the best.
Yeah.
And it keeps the engagement in meetings. So to be honest with you, if you're a grassroots coach, you can keep simple things like tally charts of tries scored, tries conceded, where your tries come from.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can mark that on a A4 piece of paper, you can have your pitch map, and you can dot where we're scoring tries from, where we're conceding from, and and from what situation. So from set piece or from counter attack, you get a lot from that. And in terms of the video, the best people to use are either your children or an injured player to film games. If you haven't got anyone, injured players, I mean, they're great because they're going to be at matches anyway, or they're going to be at training. If you need a little bit of training film, then upload onto a QuickTime on a laptop or into iMovie, and you can just cut little clips from that, and you'll find. It can be time consuming when you first start off. You get really good and you can cut a couple of clips in no time at all. As soon as you get the hang of the technology, you'll be absolutely fine.
Mm. Yeah, and I suppose it's in, like, you know, every coach's context is different. I suppose it's important then to find that sweet spot for making sure it's not, you know, paralysis by analysis and that people aren't actually not even watching all the work that you put in.
Yeah, it's actually quite interesting to say about not watching the work. We monitor which players log on to our online platform. Mm-hmm. You can see how long they log on for. And some of them don't. Some of them log on most days. So we, like you said, paralysis by analysis. We try not to overload them too much. The footage is there online if they want to watch it. It's also, we've got our analysis area where we've got 6 iMacs and a couple of laptops that the players can take home if they'd rather watch on a laptop. And then I think a professional level, I think they'll, especially the way we're trying to play, you do need to do your homework. You'll get found out if you haven't been reviewing your own training because we're moving on so quickly that they will get left behind. But there definitely is such a thing as too much analysis. We just try and do things like time our meetings, and meetings sort of 5 or 10 minutes, and we'd like to think that grown-ups can concentrate for 5 or 10 minutes in a meeting.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised that some can't.
No, I'm not surprised.
Boys do switch off.
Yeah.
They're told to bring notepads. Yep. Everyone has to bring a notepad. They have to be making notes either on their phone or handwritten And there are times where we don't do any previews at all. We won't look at the opposition.
Yeah.
If we've only played them 3 weeks ago, we'll know exactly how they're going to play. Yeah. Teams don't change too much.
Yeah.
And the players can go into their own opposition analysis. Like I said, everything that's dropped online or dropped on our server, so they can go and view it on all our iMacs at work. So you'd be surprised. A lot of the players do come up to us and they actually say, "Oh, have you seen them do this move, this move?" And it's like, "Yeah, go and feed that back to your centre partner or the halfbacks and make sure they're aware of it." And it puts the onus back on the player to make sure that they are doing their homework, and rather than a 20-minute team meeting with 50 players in there, and they can sort out themselves. Other things we try and do to not sort of do too much in terms of, it's not that about doing too much, it's about different people coming up and presenting.
Mm-hmm.
So we get players or feedback. We'll feedback in smaller subunits rather than all the backs units. We'll just feedback with the tens or the fullbacks. So it's something again this year that's been really prevalent. A couple of the players, they'll come to me with four to six clips and say, "Right, I've got a meeting with fullbacks and wingers just about our backfield defense." It'll be a really sort of kind of off the cuff, nice and relaxed meeting where everyone chats in a nice open forum. Whereas if you did that meeting in front of 40 or 50 players, then maybe the youngster wouldn't talk, wouldn't voice his opinion. He'd be a bit intimidated. Whereas now he can sort of, if he does have any sort of doubts about what he should be doing, then it brings more out of players in smaller groups. Bit of a better way to get interaction that we found.
Yeah, I sat in on the forwards presentation of just some areas they highlighted in their scrum in the game coming up to Ulster, and it was really cool just being able to sit in there and just be a fly on the wall, but then also watch the game afterwards and assess. Like, it was very simple, some really clear directives that they wanted to achieve, and to assess whether it was done or not. And it was excellent. And the set piece against Ulster, the scrum against Ulster was very good.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, it's even better when it does come off. So
yeah.
At times when it doesn't,
of course,
which is
yeah.
But no, it puts it means that if the players are presenting, you'll get they'll quite often get more buy-in from other players as well as themselves. That they'll own it more. We just found that we'll get more out of them that way, rather than just the same coach presenting the same things week in, week out. It just becomes mundane and very samey every single week. Yeah, obviously the mixture as well of clips between positive and negative. So I don't think you can get enough of the boys scoring tries, really. So we obviously make a big thing when we do score a lot of points.
Yeah,
as in our Ulster, we scored 5 great tries. I mean,
awesome,
scored 2 more tries against Ulster.
Yeah,
and
that was one of the targets
play tries
from the forwards meeting. They wanted
they did. They said that, and I think things like that. You say it, you show it. The players sort of led that week on that area, and it paid off, and it's great. Then I think you just the feeling of success is even better, really. So, yeah, obviously, I don't think you can get enough of showing players positive clips of themselves. I think that's great. We actually had a very interesting sort of a team building day. It was just interesting on certain people's takes on when you do review and preview, just showing positive clips of yourself. And it means that you'll mentally rehearse your positive clips rather than if you show too many negative clips, maybe you start to rehearse negative images of yourself, which can never be a good thing. So it's just quite a nice way of looking at it that, when we do play well, we have to make sure that we show it. We have to reinforce the good work of that.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. All right, you touched a bit on the Welsh national team. Like, they've got a great reputation in terms of analysis of being kind of one step ahead of most nations. What is there a lot of information sharing there, and what's some of the really cool things you've learned from that group?
There is a really good relationship between the four regions and the union. We do have we had to sort of buy into the way they want to do things, so we all share coding templates, which they built for us, and then they give us a quality stats app, which populates all of our coding. We just drop it into a stats app, and it creates these incredible stat reports, which the depth is outstanding, of which is why then I said that I have to sort of abbreviate it for the coaches, because it goes into too much depth for what you can actually digest for a week in, week out, a week in, week out sort of match to match working week. Other things that they do, we have to obviously make sure we get footage to them by first thing on a Monday morning. So by 7 a.m., all the regions have to drop their games off. But it also means that because the regions are playing against our opposition, it means that we get quality four-angle footage of the opposition that we're going to play in our league, which is obviously massive. And we get a stats report. We can get their stats report that one of the other regions has done as well. So yeah, we get a lot of use out of that. They've also got a site, they call it a sort of a cross comparison site. So all our stats reports get dropped in, and it's really cool that we can compare ourselves against each region.
Right.
So we can't do individual player. So our player names aren't put on there, but the positions are. So you can kind of tell which player it is, but so we could just do a quick comparison between our front row or our front five against the Scarlets front five in terms of tackle completion or number of passes a game or number of carries and things like that, which is great, because obviously one of our goals is, as you know, is to become the leading Welsh region. So on a performance level, it's great that we can just quickly compare. Every few weeks, we'll just do a quick comparison and put a quick report and just say the other regions are here at the minute on tackle completion or on tries conceded, and this is where we are. Like I said, it's just great competition for the players. They obviously do it. The S&C guys do it as well, so they know how strong we are compared to the other regions and how fit we are. So obviously, a great relationship.
That's fantastic. Yeah, and I think. In terms of the goal for every player is to play for their country, so that's a real drive for them as well to increase those numbers to fight for selection for their national team.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, last question before we wrap things up: if you had a blank check and you could get any kind of piece of technology that you don't currently have, what would it be?
To be honest, the biggest thing for us is making sure that we've got quality HD angles. It makes our coding job so much easier,
right,
having the crispest, clearest view. So anything that provides us with four great HD angles is a bonus. Something we would like to add would be a drone, just to chuck up over training. As soon as they sort out a battery life that would last the length of a game, I would love to put one up over the pitch and do a full game. Just we get so much use out of an overhead camera it would be of use, but obviously with their battery lives aren't great, and obviously you're limited. I think I don't know if they're going to bring sit and laws in with drones and things, but that would be something that would be very cool for us.
Cool, awesome. All right, well, we always end the show with the same final four questions. When you were a kid growing up in Wales, who was one of the first rugby players that you saw that you thought, I like what they're doing?
Christian Cullen would be the first one, nice, followed closely by Scott Gibbs. I remember one of the first rugby clips I remember seeing on the internet was Christian Cullen scoring his 100-meter try against I think it was the Waratahs.
Yeah.
So it was yes, stuck in my mind. And he always looked quite slight as well.
Yeah.
So he didn't look. He just looked a free flowing runner. So he's great.
He's
and then obviously Scott Gibbs for obvious reasons.
Yeah, yeah. He was
Scott Gibbs for obvious reasons, that the '97 Lions tour and his Wembley heroics against England. He's sort of he's a legend in Wales, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, and what about now? Who's some of the players that are going around on the international scene that you like what they're doing?
Currently, I'd say Talupe, Toby Faletau. He's just because he's obviously knowing him and being slightly biased from the Dragons, and he's a Gwent boy, but just the way he goes about the game, he sort of you tell him to do something and he does it straight away. He just wants to go out there and chuck a ball around. And Wales and Bath, hopefully the Dragons again in the future, they haven't seen the best of him yet. He's got a long way to go. I think he's still got he's got a great offloading game. He's as quick as the backs. And when he finally does hit he's going to be a force to be reckoned with, I think.
Yeah, he's great to watch for sure. I enjoy watching him play for Wales, and he's right up there in terms of back roles in the world stage.
Oh, definitely. He's up there. Him and Kieran Reid are probably
absolutely.
The definitely the dominant, and they're so consistent and so consistent in their games as well. It's just great.
All right, and what about coaches? Who's a high profile coach that you like what they do and respect how they go about their business?
Obviously, I've seen a lot from our Dragons coaches. Obviously, again, very biased, but just the way they all gel, and they're very different. Obviously, we're all striving for the one goal, which is to be the best region, and that they go about their business very differently, but they just gel really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
But on an international stage, I just have to say Gregor Townsend at the moment, having watched what he did with Glasgow. He just seems innovative, extremely driven, and in the way that they're going to play the game up in Scotland. And this autumn, I think Scotland set the way, really.
They are
playing a great brand of rugby at a ridiculous speed, it's great to watch, and long may it continue, really, with them. But obviously not the first six round of the Six Nations, because it's going to be a tough old day for Wales if Scotland turn up the way they played against Australia.
Yeah, that one hurt for sure watching that game. But at the same time, I was like, I just loved it from a rugby point of view, the style of rugby that Scotland were playing, and it's kind of got, for me, it's got the, you know, it reminds me of how Pat Lamb came into Connacht and basically said, we are playing this style of rugby. I don't care if it's, you know, puking down rain or dry as a bone. We're playing an attacking brand of rugby, and Gregor Townsend looks like he's doing the same thing, and, you know, it's exciting.
Absolutely. The players have no choice but to make sure their skills are up to scratch. It puts them under pressure, but when it comes off and when it becomes second nature, it's absolutely brilliant and very entertaining to watch. So
awesome.
Great.
Yeah. Okay. And last question: what about someone in the grassroots community around you that's doing good work and deserves recognition?
Don't you? Our backs coach Sean doesn't get much recognition in terms of he goes out on a Tuesday and a Thursday evening, coaches Abertillery under 14. So
that's great.
Abertillery is at the very top of Gwent. It can be pretty bleak up there in the evenings and winter. And he does a lot. All our coaches make a good point of going out to our local Gwent club.
Okay, well, thanks very much for coming on the show. It's been really interesting. It's the first conversation I've had with a video analyst, so lots of insight and lots of great information. So really want to thank you for giving up your time, and all the best to you and the Dragons for the remainder of the season.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no worries. All right, cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review via iTunes and keep listening for the next episode. You can also follow us on Twitter at RugbyCoachSCNR or via the website at therugbycoachescorner.com. Until next time, keep sharing ideas to make the game better.